Hello, everyone. This is episode 32 of the Justin Files podcast, a member of the Broken Jars Network. Today, let's see, we are going to be talking about Arthurian legends and Merlin and everything, but we're also going to be talking about movies about the Merlin and Arthur. So we're going to spoil everything, including don't know of anyway, and we're going to cuss about it. So we have a new guest. He either goes by Anubis or Michael. I'm not sure which one we're going to call him yet, but please introduce yourself by telling us your favorite character and your favorite three books of the Justin Files.
Hello, thank you for having me. My three favorite books. Turncoat, obviously, Deadbeat, and White Knight. And my favorite character is Lash the Shadow, not the Fallen Angel.
Nice. I think that's the first one for Lash. I need to make a database.
Totally. You judge everybody by their favorite characters and everything, so.
No, you don't. No, that's Alex.
Ebenezer Must Erase.
Right. We have only a little bit of news today. It's mostly that Shattered Souls is fully available. An anthology of Jim's, Cold Case, it's called. It's Molly's first day on the job, or sort of, as the Winter Lady, and there's a bunch of other short stories in it. It sounds really good, and you should probably go get it. And Unfettered 2, which is going to have Butter's first day on the job, is going to drop on December 6th.
Right. Quick note.
It's available as audiobooks?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. If you go to Jim Butcher's website, he's got all the different formats that you can get. And I mean, Amazon typically puts them in all the different formats as well. What I was going to clarify, though, Shattered Souls isn't that Jim's anthology. This is the one he edited. So,
he's certainly one of the big names of it.
Right, it's sure. One or the other. But I thought this is one that he helped to edit. So I was just going to put that in there. He's not necessarily just contributing to somebody else this time. It's actually his works too, or you know, he did the editing piece anyway. So.
I'm not a big fan of anthologies. There's just often the other authors just don't like very particular.
Well, I know you've read Rob Thurman's books, and I know she's in that one too, so you might really enjoy this one.
Yeah.
I have?
Yeah. The anthologies are good for a couple of things. I mean, you get a bunch of different authors. Usually they're all good. Or you also get them to play in a different playground, so they're not necessarily writing for their same kinds of people. But yeah, anthologies is one of those things that I usually just go get from the library because it's like, I really only wanted to read this one story. Sorry, guys. Like, you know, that's my dedication level.
I just Googled Rob Thurman.
I'm just
waiting
for brief cases.
Right. I did read some of Rob Thurman's. It's the Caliandra series, right? You're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, it's another urban fantasy.
I think I got two or three books in. I just couldn't do it anymore. He's too damn whiny. Main character. I really just had enough.
Yeah. Whatever. Let's get to our topic of Arthurian legends and Merlin. And this was a really weird episode because I didn't want to read the actual text of the Lamorte to Arthur. I just read the Cliff Notes summary of it, so I didn't read the actual text of anything. And I hope that the summary did justice enough that we understand what's going on. And I made Justin watch, was it Merlin?
Yeah,
Excalibur?
1998, both of them? Sam Neill's Merlin, which is all right. I mean, so when she's talking about spoilers, let's just clarify that, you know, you're past the statute of limitations for 1,000-year-old histories and 20 or 30-year-old movies. So, you know, if you're worried about spoilers.
This reminds me so much of my roommate who liked Harry Potter but has not finished the books yet. It gets mad when we talk about spoilers in them.
Right, those movies are.
It's just too bad, dude. You should have finished it by now.
I mean, like 3 years. That's it. After that, spoilers are okay.
Yeah, my friends are more harsh. I mean, Walking Dead, you get 2 days, and for a blockbuster, you might get the summer, maybe. But yeah, like at this point, if I, for example, of all people haven't seen the latest Star Trek movie. So if you're going to spoil it with me, I might not appreciate it, but I'm not going to grumble about it because it's been how long, you know?
So I've seen it. It's actually the best one so far.
Right. I hear that. I just, between real life and lack of interest and having a kid, like seeing the blockbuster movies when they come out in the theater is hard. Did see Doctor Strange though, totally off topic. So, yeah. So the myths. Go ahead, director. You did all this work.
Yeah, I need to have it pay off. Let's talk about time, since you were talking about like spoilers of everything. When did all of this shit happen? So the Arthurian legend seems to take place in the late 400s to early mid 500s. Like, I think he's supposed to have died in the years 537 or 539, somewhere in there. And so working backwards, we can kind of say it probably started around 450 as well.
He being Arthur, right?
Yeah, he being Arthur and starting at 450, probably being like Uther becoming king and starting to like seduce people.
Well, yeah, and so that's probably helpful to kind of lay the groundwork. So the Arthurian legend covers several generations, and the main character, the main mortal type character who covers that ground is Merlin, right? So you mostly get it from his perspective, or, you know, his involvement. And so it starts out with King Vortigern is who like rules over those lands. And then Uther comes over from Normandy, at least in the movie. I don't know what your research kind of showed. And he basically takes over.
Yeah, it's kind of close. It's like Vortigern found Merlin because he was trying to build a fortress and it wasn't going to work. And Merlin says that there's an underground lake that is fucking everything up and there's two dragons in it and they're going to fight each other. And that happened to be true. And then he said that the guy who's going to kill you is going to come. And that was actually Ambrosius, which was Uther's brother. And then Ambrosius got killed and Uther became king and then started the like illusion in order to be the Duke of Cornwall, to sleep with Duke of Cornwall's wife and make Arthur.
Right, right. So Uther is Arthur's father under illusion, basically, very, very kind of rapey. And then Igraine was Arthur's mother, who was the wife of the Duke of Cornwall.
Yeah. You know,
I hope you're all taking notes to get your family trees out, and we'll expect you to know the heraldry as well. So
it's going to get worse later. So yes, have notes.
Right, because then, yeah, Arthur's generation is way more fucked up even than that, so...
If I may add, the situation with King Vortigern building his castle is also the first instance where we have the first time there's a conflict for Merlin against the old ways, because the first reason why the king wanted Merlin is because the Druids told him that he needed to spill the blood of someone without a father on his castle for the castle to work. They got Merlin because they were afraid of Merlin and his influence. And then Merlin got the vision and revealed the real reason with the lake and the dragons. So this is the first moment where Merlin is opposed against non-Christian authority figures like the Druids.
Interesting. Right. And yeah, that's an important point.
It's kind of fun that you bring that up as well, because so I ended up watching the 1998 Merlin. I bring this up because when we compared notes afterwards, it was very, very much in line. And this is actually one of the first plot points in the movie as well, whereas like Merlin was sort of, you know, he has immaculate conception, you know, whereas like his mom just kind of had a kid and nobody knows all that. And so they went to go get Merlin because of the whole, you know, you don't have a dad. Or your dad was at least not human and that sort of thing. And so they were gonna kill him. And he's like, you don't need to fucking kill me. There's the lake thing. So yeah, that's fun overlap there.
In the legend, it is that Merlin's mother was a princess who became a nun, and that his father was an incubus or some form of spirit. But I believe the word they use is incubus.
Right.
And then maybe he's a changeling or something.
Right. This is one of the parts where like the end effect is relatively the same, but in the movie, it's actually Mab, like literally Mab, is the one who conceived the Merlin. So while I think this movie is probably the only place that does that, it's hard to shake. Like, is Butcher actually going to go with the full on like legend that he pulled from, or was Mab that spirit / incubus, you know, like, because he tends to buddy those up where there are connections and that sort of thing as well, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, there is this, you can basically make a Venn diagram of that. There is the historical research and the pop culture, and there is the layout that Butcher uses for his books.
Right, and I mean, the Santa Claus and Odin thing is a really good example as well, where, like, you know, yes, there are legends where Odin and Santa Claus are very similar, but most culture doesn't tie them together. And Butcher's like, oh no, that's totally a thing. We're totally doing that.
Yeah, and more timeline things that kind of fall into line is that it was said in the books, I think by Harry, that Merlin created or moved the White Council from Rome to Edinburgh around the time that the fall of Rome took place. And there were a lot of falls of Rome because there's a lot of Roman empires if you actually have to look into it with history. But the most famous one took place in the year 476 with the fall of the Western Roman Empire. And that does line up in timeline with Arthurian happenings. So like right there in that bubble of time, there's a ton of shit happening.
One of the technical terms for tons of shit happening is a confluence. So just throwing that out there. But yeah, like it's fun to think that while Arthur is building his Knights of the Round Table, that Merlin is behind the scenes building up the White Council. And, you know, that these huge power plays are happening in England, you know, because, you know, certainly from a Western centric point of view, like this is some of the more important shit happening for 100 years right here, at least until the Battle of Hastings and some other things happen later. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm remembering it correctly, but the White Council was also at Vatican for some time. I think Dresden mentioned it, that the White Council moves around from Rome to Vatican and it's currently in Edinburgh. So at some point it was very tied to the church. Then we get the whole translation issues with wizards are now bad. And then they moved over to Edinburgh.
Right. So along those lines, I mean, it's in our notes. We can bring it up here that, you know, the Merlin was at least around for the Council of Nicaea, right, where he helped form the church. So it does seem like the Merlin and the church were very, you know, hand in hand working towards the same goals for at least, you know, a little while. The Council of Nicaea was 300 and what? 325. That would be AD or CE, current era, right? So, yeah, so interesting note.
And that is always, that is confirmed in the legends, pure Arthurian legends. There is, they say about his birth, he had the father, devil was his father. He had a nun as a mother, so he had the powers from both sides. That is a theme that occurs in the original legends about Merlin.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was the whole, you know, translation about the whole witches and, you know, can't suffer a witch to live and that sort of thing. But that didn't happen until
1600?
Like, yeah, I was going to say the King James Version, right? So wasn't he the one that decided to go super hard line and actually changed away from the church? So, it's kind of interesting. Some of the creep, and I mean, over the centuries, I mean, it's easy to say, well, oh, that was only 1,000 years, but I mean, you know, we're talking 10 plus generations, so it's everything so fucking different that it's crazy. And then when was the Inquisition? Because that's obviously one of the wedges between wizards and the church at that point.
It was the 1500s, I think.
Okay, so yeah. And that almost makes sense that the Inquisitions spurred, you know, the King James translation to take the hardline approach and kind of gave them credence for that. That's the part that I like, is that when we research it, we get bullet points and we're like, well, this happened and then this happened and then this happened. And I like to connect the dots and be like, well, this is why that happened or could be why that happened. You know, there's obviously a huge depth of scholarly knowledge you'd have to tie that directly together, but...
I mean, one can also make the argument that Merlin wasn't really into the church. He was more about preserving knowledge, because the first thing we get about him is that he saved all the documents from the library of Alexandria as it was burning down. And that's probably his oldest feat, which was before the Common Era.
Is that in the lore, or is that like
Dresden mentions it? Dresden mentions it. He's like, yeah, he jumped into the fires of the burning library and saved documents.
When is that mentioned?
I think it's Small Favor, actually, because I was looking last night. It's Cold Days. It's in Cold Days because I saw this quote on Goodreads, and it lists his accomplishments. Like, he personally ran into the burning library at Alexandria to save some of the most important texts. He did X, Y, and Z, and he also leaped over cathedrals in a single bound. So I remember that part of the quote, but...
Right. I have no idea how to segue this, so this is awkward, but we're going to talk about people and identity and kind of confusions and connections between them. Sorry about that, guys. But like, one of the bigger confusions when reading all of this is the difference between Morgana Le Fay and Morgaus. Because Morgana Le Fay seems to be a person in the Dresden Files because her athame shows up and infects Leah. But there's also, like, is she the one that is Arthur's sister or not? Because the summary that I read of La Morte d'Arthur that is written by Sir Thomas Malory in the 1400s, treats them as two separate people. Morgaus is Arthur's half-sister and the mother of Mordred, as well as Gawain, one of the other knights, and the wife of Sir Lot, or King Lot, sorry. And then Morgana Le Fay is the wife to Sir Uriens, and I don't think it's mentioned that she has any children, but she's the one that is definitely a sorceress and is like Arthur's greatest enemy and fucks with him all the time, including trying to pit him against another friend with Excalibur, hoping that he kills his friend with the sword, which gets really weird when you think of the sword as being Amorakius.
Right. And so in the Merlin show, there are so many parallels where it's like, obviously it's not Amorakius, but there are so many times that it basically comes up that the sword can't hurt good men and it can only be wielded by good men. And one of the ways they kind of resolve like an early civil war that Arthur had to contend with is Arthur just rides up to the opposing general and says, look, if you fucking think you can be king, take the sword and strike me down. And when he raises it up, he's kind of like, ah, shit, I can't do this. And it's kind of implied that the sword wouldn't let him type of a situation. So a lot of that is interesting, but you're right with the kids. Like, it seems like, at least in the modern interpretation, that two Morgaus and Morgana get combined because that's how this movie treated them. And Morgana / Morgaus was like was the mother of Mordred when Arthur was the father, which gets really weird when you think of them as half siblings as well. In the movie, she tricks him. Like, she shows up as Guinevere or somebody like that, and she tricks him, which is, by the way, if you haven't caught on to that, that seems to be a theme that we're just going to, like, you know, polymorph or, you know, make illusions of ourselves as your spouse and then go have a kid with you. You know, that's apparently the whole Arthurian legend is based on that, so.
Yeah, it happens multiple times, because also Lancelot has a bastard child named Galahad, and he's in love with Guinevere, but then there was a girl named Elaine that was in love with Lancelot, and she got herself illusioned into Guinevere, went to Lancelot, got pregnant, Lancelot found out and got, like, went crazy and went mad, and then eventually came back because he was healed at an altar when the Grail just, like, appeared and then disappeared, and then everything's happy. But Galahad was, like, the holiest of knights, and he was the one who actually achieved the Grail quest. And then I think he became an angel, and then Harry called Ramirez Galahad in White Knight. So what can we take from that?
Well, so I don't know where you got the whole angel thing. So that was something that I was curious about because I hadn't heard that before. So is there more detail on that?
After they got the Holy Grail, and then, like, the wasteland was cured and a king had a curse lifted and a bunch of happy things happened because the Holy Grail just kind of appeared and they're holy. I'm not really sure the details, but then it said that someone and such and so got married under Galahad's supervision, and then he was transfigured before the court. And I took that to mean that he became an angel.
Right, or at least, you know, did the whole vacuum up into heaven thing.
Yeah.
So, interesting. I mean, that's kind of the main thing about Galahad and his knighthood is that Galahad was the pure knight, you know, like, he was one of the only ones that had never been corrupted. Like, Lancelot, you know, he was supposed to be that, and then, you know, fell in love with Guinevere, which was taken by Arthur. You know, they were kind of a thing, and so that was all adulterous and terrible. And then Arthur was supposed to be beyond reproach, but when Mordred showed up, due to that trickery, you know, that becomes a huge thing. So Galahad was like the one guy who never fell. So it's kind of interesting that he got transfigured, as they said. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and
I never took that to mean that he became an angel, though. So like transfiguration, translation, I think is what some other places call it. So mostly you just wind up in heaven. You know, you don't go to jail, you don't pass go, you just go straight to heaven. So,
but he kind of like interferes a little bit later, like during the last battle with Mordred and Arthur. He got a vision. Arthur got a vision from Galahad saying that he needs to wait for Lancelot's help. And it didn't happen, and then everyone killed each other. But like the fact that he's still doing things made me think he's an angel.
That's fair. Interesting.
But there's this really weird trend of illegitimate sons doing really extreme things. Like Arthur is illegitimate and then legitimized by the marriage between Uther and Igraine. But Mordred is like the evilest person in the story.
Right.
In various ways. And he's the incestuous illegitimate son, and then Galahad is the awesome, holy person, illegitimate son. It's a really weird trend.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm sure it's true to the histories of the time, you know, where like a lot of this sort of thing happened, but you know, where you get weird is when you start looking at history with a literal, you know, scientific sense or something like that, and it'd be like, no, I totally slept with him, but I thought he was you, I swear, you know, so. Like, yeah. Because otherwise you're going to fucking burn me at the stake and chop off my head, which they almost did to Guinevere until Lancelot saved her. That's part of the legend as well, where, you know, Arthur was literally going to burn her at the stake, kind of at Mordred's, you know, prodding, at least in the show. I don't know how they dealt with that in the legend. So
no, that was the thing in the legend was Mordred and another person, Agravain, that was Gawain's other brother or something. Yeah, get your genealogies out. You need it. They were like trying to make bad things happen, I think, to Lancelot because they were jealous of him. And then they found out and exposed the affair, and Guinevere was going to be burned at the stake because that was the law. And Mordred's like, nope, this is law. You have to do this. Come on, Arthur, just do it already. Right. And then Lancelot saved her.
That's also an interesting throwback to one of the predictions about Arthur's court, that no one will be able to destroy it, but only from within. They will be able to be damaged. So Mordred's action can be interpreted as this prophecy coming true. Very right. Nemesis-like, if we want to go back to Dresden Files.
Yeah.
An enemy from within.
Yeah, we'll get to that, I think. But like, let's go into like more identity confusion, because there's the nature of Merlin's girlfriend by whatever name she is, like Vivian right. or Vivienne or Nimue. I usually know her as Nimue.
I think in the movie it's Nimue.
It's Nimue in the movie for sure, yeah. So,
So it's supposed to be that she learned magic from Merlin and then locked him up in like a stone or a cave or a tree trunk or something. And by most accounts, it's very malicious towards him in various ways, but sometimes he deserves it. Like she's the thankless girl who took his magics and then locked him up forever to leave him to rot. Or he's a lecherous old dude that wants to rape her and she locks him up in order to get away from him. But it's always against him. Yeah. Yeah, but in the movie it seems that she's the one who got locked up, which is an interesting departure.
Right.
And yeah, in the movie...
Yeah, I mean, Merlin was the main character.
You just saw it, Dustin, so you can probably remember.
Right, yeah, so in the movie, it's like she actually spends more time with Mab because Mab's the chief antagonist, you know, with Morgana and Mordred being there as well. You know, M's make you the bad guy for some reason. But so she didn't really learn any magic from Merlin. And then she kind of tricks Merlin into going into a cave where it's like their paradise. And then Merlin's like, oh, shit, Mordred and Arthur are fighting to the death. I've got to go save Arthur. And then when he leaves, the cave seals up and seals her inside. So it's not really anybody's doing. If anybody did it, it was Mab. Yeah, but it was one of the main departures from, you know, your notes on the legend and my notes of the movie. They otherwise lined up very similarly, and you could see some minor omissions or deviations. But this one was kind of a major one where it's like, no, we locked you up because you're an asshole and the son of the devil, maybe. Or, you know, just because I'm an asshole and, you know, the daughter of the devil, maybe. Or because... it's a tragic story and Romeo and Juliet can't be together. And so I'm going to be locked up in this cave for reasons. Maybe it's a thing that's not well understood, but I would throw out the movie in favor of the, you know, the death of Arthur that you were reading the cliff notes of. So,
but. Yeah. Nimue, but whatever you call her, she seems to be treated as two different people in the legend as well, although I didn't catch that in the summary, so it makes me nervous about everything else I caught in the summary. But Wikipedia says that the same thing I read, the summary of, was there's kind of two different people. There's Nivain, and then there's Nimue, and both of them are ladies of the lake, and both of them give Excalibur to Arthur. And I've always been thinking the lady of the lake is Leia because I liked it. And I don't know, are they the same person?
I mean, if you read the legends, around the third or fourth version, everybody was the Lady of the Lake at some point, and everybody was ruler of Avalon at some point. It's like the most handed out title in the legends.
But she does seem to be the person that gives Arthur Excalibur whenever he needs it. Like, the first time that he just... Oh, it's an awesome thing, I guess, because you're an awesome person. And then it got lost, I think, and she just shows up to give it to him again, and then he gives it back to her at the end.
So, hold on, just to clarify, Michael, you're saying that the Lady of the Lake is a mantle, and that everybody gets to wear it at some point? Like, crazy.
Not everything in the Dresden verse is a mantle.
Yeah, but it certainly seems pretty compelling. Yeah.
I mean, the title of Merlin is a mantle, totally but we have multiple Merlins right now in the Dresden verse.
Are you sure it's not a mantle? Maybe all of them turn into like old assholes that want to do fucking asshole shit.
It's not literally a mantle, but it
isn't an asshole. He does what he has to do.
Oh no, he's an asshole.
He's an asshole.
Isn't an asshole.
Yes, Langtree's a wizard first and a politician second, and sometimes we're not sure a politician is second. I mean, Langtree is only the Merlin because he knows how to manipulate, you know, the White Council, basically. Like, I mean, granted, he has earned his stripes. He does know how to do warding magic and other things as much as possible, but like, it's very, very heavily implied in numerous places that part of the way he gets shit done is because he manipulates the fuck out of everybody. And, I mean, that's evidence every time Dresden goes up against him. He's always got three plans, you know?
Yeah, so what's better, a politician who gets things done with words and nobody dies, or someone like Dresden who has to duke everything out? Langstreet does what he has to do because on his shoulders lies the fate of all humanity.
Uh-huh.
I'm feeling another ethics episode.
Right. Yeah, so it's tough to say who's better. I'm not saying we don't need one over the other, but Dresden did kind of save the White Council and therefore humanity and changes because he got shit done instead of talking it to death. Just saying.
I mean, Dresden's also an asshole, but like Langtree's also an asshole. That's my
But Langtree said in changes that they are going to attack the Red Court. I mean, Dresden just beat them up to the punch. He didn't have a plan.
Let's talk about like the original Merlin.
Langtree was just going to let a little girl die.
Right.
Yeah, let's go back to the topic of this episode. Right. We're kind of leaving off with swords and like Leia or Lady of the Lake, which I happily call Leia because it does very fairy things. Like maybe it could be Mab as well. And like the fact that it's water but actually it really just sounded like Jenny Greenteeth to me.
Right.
Because there's this thing in the legends of Gawain going off to prove himself as a knight, and a green knight shows up and he cuts off his head and then he like picks it back up and they're gonna go fight in a year and everything's green and it's just
glossing over the best parts of this legend. So the knight shows up and he's like, I'm gonna give everybody a hit, but I'm gonna hit you back, you know, like twice as hard. And so Gawain chops his fucking head off, and the knight picks up his head and says, well, cool, see you in a year. It's like, oh, shit, are you fucking kidding me? Like, so anyway, and then, I mean, continue with the legend. Like, he shows up because Gawain is a knight and a man of his word.
Yeah, and he's a man of his word because he was staying with the dude next to the green chapel that he was going to meet the green knight in. And like they make this deal of like whatever the host gets from hunting, he will give to Gawain if Gawain gives whatever he got in the castle back to the host. And the wife just kind of kept coming on to Gawain and giving him kisses. And so he transferred those kisses to the host, like sticking to the bargain. And then he's proved to be an honorable man.
Did he get kisses and then he went and kissed the host a lot?
Yes. Like,
okay.
Yes.
And, oh, I didn't take it that way.
I'm going to give you some smooches now from your wife. Come on, bring it in.
Yeah. And then he goes, fights the Green Knight, and it's like, come on, fight me. And it's not really working. Gawain's terrified. But it turns out that the Lady of the Lake sent the Green Knight in order to test Arthur's court if he's virtuous. It's just like interfering all the time. And
right. Well, and to finish it out, like the knight ends up like giving Gawain a love tap by comparison. You know, because it was a test, you know, and not actually, I'm going to chop your head off twice or something. So, but that was, so to kind of bring that up with the whole testing, if the court was virtuous and things like that, one thing that I kept expecting to show up, even just lip service or anything like that, was the whole, like, the old code of hospitality. And nowhere at any point in time did I see evidence of that. Not really in your notes and not really from the movie that I saw, where like everybody makes a big deal. And even in the movie doesn't fully push the limit on fairies can't tell a lie type of thing. You know, Mab is manipulative, and I'd have to be a lawyer to find out if she ever like directly lied. But there were a couple of points where somebody said, okay, I won't kill him, and then had somebody else go kill him. So that kind of counts, but those were just dudes. Those weren't fairies at any point. But it was just kind of interesting where it was like, this might be something that is mentioned somewhere, but Butcher's the one that takes it all the way to the hilt for his story purposes, because I didn't really get that feel anywhere.
Hospitality was mentioned in the summary I read. It kind of kept it out of the notes I gave you guys because I didn't really feel it was fully important. But like when they're off questing after the Holy Grail, I think it was Galahad was told to like be very virtuous tonight or something. And he and Lancelot were staying at a place. Lancelot ate and drank a ton at a feast, but Galahad only had water and bread. And he was awesome enough to see the Holy Grail, and Lancelot passed out at the sight of it.
This is the Castle Anthrax, right?
I think so. There was a couple of times of like,
isn't
be a good host.
Babes too, that like, right. That like tips them or something.
Did they
Galahad
give the
was like, nah.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. One of the knights is like, oh, the girl carrying the grail is the one I'm in love with. Yay. But there's a lot of times it's just like, be a good guest tonight, and then you get a glance at the Holy Grail. But actually, to bring it up, it was a Holy Grail procession that had the grail and right. The platter and the spear. And they're all carried by a different woman.
I think it's funny in the legends there how they're on a quest to find the grail, yet it shows up all the time. They just don't get it.
Yeah, it shows up and then it disappears and everything's happy. It just shows up to then go away. I'm very confused.
It's like the in Family Guy, the Kool-Aid character, the Holy Grail just crashes through the wall, shows up, and then leaves again.
Right. Well, so you were just talking about the procession being three items, three different women, and I didn't connect it until just now, but Hecate and the three queens, basically, or, you know, yeah, like that's another trio of women that tie in. And so far, it seems like Butcher's just like, they're all the same people, you know, like the fairies, the, you know, maybe the Holy Grail procession. So maybe the fairies had already been in control of those, or, well, so it hadn't happened that the fairies in the Dresdenverse theoretically only take power in the Battle of Hastings, right? So technically it would it still be like
before the fairies took power, it was, I think, under the Norse. So okay. Those three women would have been the Norns, if we're going literally, the past, present, future. which seem to be the mothers at the very least, because Skuld is one of the names of the Norns, and that is one of the ones that Hera uses in Cold Days for Mother Winter.
Right. Was she the mother at the time, though?
The mother never changed. The Winter Mother never changed.
Yes.
But at some point, she wasn't the mother, in theory.
But she is the only Mother Winter we have ever had.
Okay. Because I thought the whole point was the mother's...
Where did the mantle originate from if there was no one before her?
It was created.
By whom?
Yeah, exactly, right? So yeah. do you want to go Western Christian and say that the white god, for reasons unknown to anybody, created the fairies to protect mankind from the creatures in the outer gates, or that belief just created them through legend, for example, like, you know, people created the fairies because they wanted to explain away the seasons and disasters and disease, you know, like, which angle do you take it? Do you take it that mankind created that, or that it was an external creator and came down? Like, that's kind of the myth of the Dresden verse. Like, where the fuck did all this come from?
Yeah, I got the impression that there are always pantheons around the world, depending on human beliefs, and just the most powerful one at the time takes over the defending of the gates. So in that option, the fairies were around, but the moment people started less and less believing in the Norse myth, the fairies become more powerful enough and just took over the mantles. So they are created by human, and the moment the scales of power tip in favor of one pantheon, that pantheon takes over watching the gates. That's how I see it.
Right, and it's worth mentioning, I think, that it's both, like, the fairies probably consumed some of the mantles, but some of the more powerful Norse just get assimilated as well, you know, like Odin and Santa Claus. You know, they didn't take Odin's mantle so much as he's like, oh, hey, look, I could probably do this and tie it into the fairy pantheon and make it all right. Because Santa Claus, I mean, he works with elves, but I never thought he was a fairy until the Dresden Files, so... But it makes sense with all his magical powers and shit.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Kind of a question more about magic, I think, but kind of like, where the hell did anything come from? Is Avalon is considered a place in the legend, and there is a Lady of Avalon. And at the end of the legend, when Arthur is dying and he returns the sword to the Lady of the Lake, it's actually a procession of three women, the Lady of the Lake, the Lady of Avalon, and Morgana Le Fay. And they all take him to Avalon and bury him, where he will remain until Britain needs him again. And where is Avalon? Where is a place that Merlin is connected to that possibly he built?
Yeah, an island, perhaps. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. It, where that it contains
they put people.
People
in stasis? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm being contrarian. I think they're different places, for sure. And here's... So... It's funny. I mean, part of it is that I'm being contrarian because it's too easy, but part of it is it doesn't fully make sense to me for one major thing. Arthur would be the only good guy in the well, and the well is there to hold nightmares, you know? So,
yeah,
so two things. First of all, if Arthur's really just a dude, he'd be fucking nuts if he was staying there anyway, if he was in stasis like everybody else, you know, or... Again, he's one of these things is not like the other. So it's possible Avalon is a sister island to Demon Reach. I could go there, but I don't think he's literally in the well.
What I mean, if he is a grumpy old British dude locked in a crystal?
Yeah, that's a very good tie-in, because a lot of people want to think that grumpy old British dude is Merlin, although Jim has said it's not Merlin, and... He'd be so British, Harry wouldn't be able to understand him, and I assume the same would qualify for Arthur.
Yeah, that's the only hiccup with the theory. That if it were Arthur from the 5th century, we wouldn't understand him, because the great vowel shift happened in 1600s. And to
what if he's speaking with his mind, so the translation just kind of comes across? And he sounds British, because he's British. I don't know.
Yeah, that gets complicated very quickly, because, I mean, you have to imagine how is this supposed to work. some kind of telepathy that breaks into your brain, scans it for cultural references to translate the language. I mean, that gets complicated very quickly if you think of it technically.
Yeah, like the little bit we see in Skin Game of the things trying to talk to Harry, they're like, a lot of them are using English, and a lot of them are like just sending him images of like blood, death, gore, and nightmarish things, and some of the glavish, Lara, Lara. It's like, do that, then why aren't all of them doing it?
Yeah, and exactly. Besides, Dresden had definitely his mind guards up. So some semi-intelligent translation interface in a telepathy spell would probably not be able to hack into his mind to translate the language so he can understand it. So I think the person actually speaks old British English from the 1600s at least. Otherwise, Dresden wouldn't understand him.
Yeah.
So something else to bring up here, actually, because part of the debunking of the Merlin theory is Word of Jim, which bears noting because that implies that Word of Jim Merlin did not make it into the 1600s. So we at least have an upper limit that the Merlin is, you know, middle old English, not modern English. So that's interesting to see it from the other perspective and kind of take it as a thank you very much. You actually gave us something to go on. But yeah, I think the British guy is something else. I haven't been convinced by any of the theories that he's, you know, again, why would the Merlin lock himself in his own place? Or if he didn't, who locked him in there? And if it's Arthur, like if Arthur is supposed to be the good guy and the hero that comes and saves us in the end times, that would be the most awful resting place ever, unless, you know, there's some other mechanism in place there to protect him from everything else going on.
Yeah, I mean, Arthur, he seems as awesome as Michael. He sounds like a Knight of the Cross and worthy of bearing Amorakius. And maybe, I mean, if it is Arthur, there's something like he feels so guilty for everything like going to shit, because basically after the fight with Arthur and Mordred, Guinevere goes to become a nun, Lancelot becomes a monk, and everyone else is dead. The end. So it's like maybe he just feels as guilty as that he thinks he belongs there.
Maybe, but I mean, so we're still talking about, bad shit happened, awful shit happened, right? And you deserve to be punished versus you deserve to be locked up with fucking nightmares from beyond the gates of reality. Like there's not a correlation there, right? That's like, sure, you deserve to go to jail and spend out the rest of your days locked in a cell and maybe solitary, or you literally get to go spend time with nightmare-inducing, mind-breaking critters for 1,000 years. Like, that's not even on the same playing ground. It's way over the top.
I mean, the most likely candidate for somebody to be locked up in the well is one of the previous wardens of the well. I mean,
we're going to have the same language problem, but what if it was Mordred? He's a really bad guy.
Right.
Yeah, but the guy in Demon Reach is, like, guilty. He feels guilty for it. He thinks he deserves to be
Mordred
there.
Maybe Mordred spent a lot of time there, and he thought about it. He's like, damn, I was an asshole.
Well, Mordred doesn't make it, if I remember right. Arthur and Mordred kill each other in the legend.
Yeah.
Or at least, sorry, Mordred mortally wounds Arthur because then he gets to go to Avalon, whatever.
Yeah, but Mordred is dead.
Right. The other...
Yeah, Merlin shows up, heals Arthur up, and they go to Avalon.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the Negloshi are the least of the creatures in the well.
I love how badass the Negloshi is, and it's kind of just set up that... this place is so badass that they're in minimal security.
Right, exactly. And there's six of them.
That's so cool.
You know, that's something else to keep in mind is that either, you know, whatever the British guy is, if he is one of these critters from legend, he's somehow beyond that. Whereas as much as I appreciate Arthur and he's a Knight of the Cross, I would not put Michael up against one of the Negloshi unless something was like limiting his magical powers. You know,
I mean, the swords limits magical power. That's the whole function there. Level the playing field. But we assume that being locked up in a crystal automatically means that you have to talk with the other prisoners. That's never established. I mean, it is stasis. It's possible that you don't, that you're not exposed to all the evilness around you when you're in a crystal.
But if the whole place emanates evil enough to make its own ley line, right, and Harry can hear from all the prisoners, why wouldn't the prisoners be like able to influence each other?
Well, and so
if,
that's
if talking, if nothing else.
That's part of it. Like, if I agree with you, like, there's nothing to say that they talk to each other, and it would be a bad security move. You know, in prisons, you don't necessarily want your prisoners, especially when they're bigger and badder than you, to be able to communicate and plan a break, right? But then why would you leave it open so that they could talk to the warden? You know, like, it's one thing if you can walk up and open the door and be like, yep, he's still in there, and close it, but why the hell would you just allow them to accost you as you walk down the aisle, so to speak?
I mean, isn't it said that the warden can release and lock up people, so he has to be able to look inside a crystal to some degree to see what's in there. If maybe I need this monster and maybe I should release it now. So it can be part of the mechanics of a demon reach. So that
right.
He knows.
It also just be some of the crystal. I mean, I don't know. It's every crystal he runs past, but I was just thinking it could be only even for all the powerful creatures there. It would be some of the powerful creatures that are able to, like, they can still extend their consciousness out.
Well, and what I'm saying, though, is, like, that all makes sense, but it would be under Dresden's control, in theory, whereas it seems like this is something that is secondary, like, that happens to him while he's walking through there. You think that either Alfred would protect him from it, or Dresden wouldn't allow it by default, if he knew better anyway. So either he's ignorant of the mechanism, or it's not there, you know? So that's kind of what I'm saying, is that you wouldn't allow people to just come and accost you, even at a low level, like the British guy telling you to sod off, you know? So that's why I'm saying it's kind of implied that they can talk to each other. And like Andreas said, the real point there is that even if you're a normal dude, even if the critters don't talk to you and give you nightmares for 1,000 years, the well drives people off just by being there. And it's been shown that the black magic actually corrupts normal people just by being nearby. So that would be an awful thing.
Is it the ley line or is it Alfred? I was under the impression
it's Alfred.
The ley line springs
out from this prison. The ley line has been created by all this dark force.
That's why they call it the well, is because it's the source of the dark magic.
Yeah, because it wells up, yeah. But I mean, every time we are told that the island scares people away or drives them crazy, it is always mentioned that it is Alfred that is doing it.
Well, and Alfred had part of it playing into it, but I mean, I'm talking just in the Dresden verse in general, like when they go to attack Mavra Scourge, that the area of town was devoid of people on the street just because the creep factor from the dark magic and the evil happenings, which is also Lovecraftian in origin, really, that when weird shit starts going on, normal people bugger off. And so to be locked for 1,000 years in a well with a bunch of Lovecraftian nightmares, whether they can talk to you or not, that dark magic is going to permeate you. So that's why I'm saying, like, I doubt any of the good guys are locked up here. That's like my strongest argument for why not. Otherwise, everything, I mean, yeah, it all kind of makes sense. It is tied to Merlin. It's all very circumstantial, and there's enough of it. But I think that's one of the flaws of the theory.
Yeah, the easiest solution would be it's one of the previous wardens. It would explain the language issue and
right.
other problems.
Like, maybe he almost let them out and then got locked there for his efforts, you know?
Yeah.
But we don't get to find out until book 19, I think he said. So we have a long time to wait. But I want to talk about Nemesis and how it might be affecting Arthurian things and therefore the Dresdenverse. Like, we know Morgana Le Fay is a person in the Dresdenverse, and her Athame was infected with Nemesis that infected Leah. It could have just been done by Cowl and Kamori at Bianca's party, or maybe it was already infected and also did things to Morgana. And maybe that's why she's such an asshole to Arthur.
Right. So, unfortunately, I don't know if we've got enough evidence to say one or over the other, but there are definitely strong indications that Nemesis was in play in the fall of the Round Table in general.
Yeah, definitely Mordred is a Nemesis.
Yeah, and if Morgana and Morgause are the same person and Mordred is her son, then, like, she infects him, he goes to Arthur, and he destroys everything else. Sounds right.
Yeah.
It's plausible for sure. You know, and that's, I think that's one of the more interesting things about that part of the legend is that Nemesis has been in play a long time and maybe always, you know.
I think there's a VOG that Nemesis was around since forever.
VOG.
VOG, yeah. Award of June.
Award of June.
Sorry, the accent was just really funny. It was fun. Yeah.
Sorry, German and Polish is my first language only.
Oh, that's great. I loved it.
I can say one sentence in Polish, but it's not very polite.
Right. That's like most of the German I know is swearing too, so yeah.
I also know Latin, but that's for another day.
Right. And also, like, Merlin is known for prophesizing a lot of things, like he, the dragons and the underground lake and Uther, and then the king that will succeed him and be the best king ever in Britain. Also, he had something to do with a dragon-shaped star as being the sign for Arthur, which also begs the question, is he a starborn? Or is that just me reading into it too much? He prophesized the coming of Lancelot and Percival, but not Galahad for some reason. And this darkness.
Isn't that Percival? Or?
Well, it has an E at the end of it, so I assume it's pronounced Percival. Because
it's
modern
it's
English.
It's usually pronounced Percival, or some variation, at least in this day and age. Maybe you're more right in an older. But yeah, so. Anyway, the Starborn note was pretty interesting because it opens up the question, like, we're pretty sure Arthur doesn't have any specific magical talent. And to date, the only people we know that were Starborn or candidates of Starborn were wizards. So is it only a wizard thing, or could literally anybody be? And how fucking badass would a Knight of the Cross be if he also could use the sword against outsiders?
Yeah.
You know, and
has it ever been confirmed Starborn equals being able to fight outsiders?
Yes.
There's
the capacity to the capacity to hold some influence above Starborn is what Lash calls it. The capacity to hold some influence about outsiders.
Right.
To withstand their attacks, like both in the showdown at White Knight and the basically entirety of Cold Days.
Right. Those are the things, is that it's implied that it gives you some boost of protection and it gives you theoretically more direct power over it, because otherwise you have to be like council level power to even hurt an outsider for the most part, or to drive them off. Because the outsiders were used in the Battle of Sicily, and they took the combined might of the senior council to pull their grease out of the fire. So yeah, like that's the thing. Like,
really get his ex-girlfriend on the playing field again, and she's Starborn too, right?
She was a candidate, so that's part of the other thing, is that De Morn got both of them because he wasn't sure who it was in theory, and we don't know.
Is it someone, not just people who are born on a certain date who are magically inclined?
That's kind of what I'm thinking, is that, you know, it's a person, so maybe it's a mantle. Not everything's a mantle, but this one, if only one person can be a Starborn, then maybe it is, you know, or at least nearly. So
it can also be that somebody is born with the potential to be a Starborn, but you have to do certain things to become a Starborn. Like, Elaine never fought outsiders, never made dealings with Winter. It could all be things that are necessary to become a Starborn. You're born with the potential, and then you have to do certain things to become a Starborn.
Right. But that does kind of leave it open that Elaine could very quickly catch up in that regard, because she still pretty much gives Harry a run for his money. So, you know, as far as power...
She's a very talented wizard, that's for sure.
Right. So... You were saying 10 books ago, but I mean, the last time we saw her was White Knight, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah, it seems like this Nemesis thing in the Arthurian legend is like very plausible, because he's prophesizing this darkness that threatens everything awesome in Arthur's kingdom. And then everything went to shit.
Yeah, I think it's in the myth, it's said that only a threat from within could destroy Camelot. That sounds very Nemesis-y to me.
Yeah, it also sounded kind of Denarian-y. And there's things that, when reading the summary, were not obviously things like illusions but the Mordred and Arthur were at a truce until Lancelot could get there, and they were just going to not fight each other. And then one of the soldiers pulls out a sword to attack a snake that bit him, and that triggered the entire battle that killed everyone. And it just seems like that's really convenient for whoever wants to kill a ton of people.
Right.
So
the unfortunate thing about that is that if it was some kind of illusion or trick, it's not like there was a lack of sorceress types, you know, in the area that we have to go pull in the Denarians or something. I mean, it could have been Nemesis, it could have been Mordred or Morgana, or, you know, hell, it could have been Merlin, for crying out loud, like, if he had reason to. So there are 100 different things it could have been, and it could have been some other guy that we don't know yet. Talking about it in Dresden Files anyway.
And still the idea of, like, being taken down from within is, like, the Denarians are just classic power of betrayal in order to manipulate other people into doing it, and the distrust that he tries to do in small favor, it's like, maybe, especially if Arthur is a Knight of the Cross, according to the Dresden verse. But then it's like, Morgana could do it, but is Morgana a good person or a bad person? Why does she show up to take him to Avalon? Maybe it was that she was Nemesis and then cured of it, like Leah was.
How long ago did the old Arthurian thing, that's like 1500, 1600 years ago?
It's about, 1500 to 1600 years ago. Which is
council
about...
Is the council not older?
No, the council is older, but like Merlin moved him to Edinburgh and then made the laws of magic.
Always thought the original Merlin was the founder of the White Council.
No, some prototype of the council existed since pre-Roman times, and then Merlin showed up and codified it and created the current White Council. He, like, reformed them. We have a senior council, we have 7, the oldest, we have the last, the 7.
He changed it. There was an organization before that.
Right.
Yeah.
Or there was at least, organization, like there was a loose fan club of people who do magic together, and he made it what we recognize today.
Yeah. And thinking of the laws of magic that he made, he's the one who made time travel and looking into the time of the future or behind, whatever, as illegal. It's interesting that he seemed to have done it so often, both in prophesizing of all sorts of people that show up in the Arthurian legend and creating demon reach.
Well, he set a lot of shit up over the time, and now he just don't want anyone else to mess with it.
That's possible.
So let's make it a law that nobody can mess with it.
Yeah. Well, now that I have done everything I want with it, nobody else can use time travel.
Only me. I know what I'm doing. You don't know what you're doing. I know what I'm doing.
I think that's part of the point, though, too, that it ties in with other media recently that I'm going to avoid just for spoilers, potentially, but that, you know, leaders often do that, where they lay down the laws and that sort of thing. I mean, you don't want your 16-year-old warlocks and sorcerers running around manipulating time, but Rashid fucking does it, so who's going to chop Rashid's head off? Yeah. You know, the Black Staff murders people all the fucking time, and yet nobody seems
to... Black Staff is allowed.
Uh-huh. The Black Staff is sort of allowed, sort of nobody can stop him, and sort of the staff takes care of the manipulation there. Rashid is very fucking careful not to, like, break the laws, and I mean, I think that's kind of the Merlin thing, is that you guys are all fucking children, so before you hurt yourself and 200 other people, don't fucking do it, you know?
I think strictly prophesizing isn't against the law.
Well, if you're looking into the future and it's like, oh, that's going to happen, see, prove it. And it's kind of stepping on its toes.
I mean, the wording is to swim against the currents of time. So looking at that isn't...
Yeah.
And prophecy has always been kept kind of special in the way that they usually bring it into the modern, is that it's vague. You know, prophecies are not a sure thing. You know, you didn't literally see the future or go to the future and bring that knowledge back. You
just saw the most probable.
Exactly.
I mean, in Death Masks, there was the prophecy that Nicodemus fucked with, and like the way he described it is that the things that can do prophecy are usually in multiple time points at once, and they have to be vague, otherwise they might destroy the time parts that they're in.
Right.
But yeah. Just kind of getting a glimpse of it. I don't know. But then there's still the whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like,
what did Rob call it? In Proven Guilty? Foresight?
Wizard's Sight Foresight, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's like that.
I mean, Rashid definitely sees into the future, but he just gives out information to... He never gives a direct answer. He just manipulates the outcome so that the information he gave is still relevant in the future. I mean, like...
Yeah, which...
It's the whole stolen car example that Bob gives. If you go back in time to prevent your car getting stolen, you don't have a reason to... go back in the past to prevent your car getting stolen. But if you tell somebody, watch out for your car, they will watch out for your car in the past as well. It's very, you have to be very delicate with the information you send.
Yeah, I have one more thing to say about the laws of magic as Merlin seems to use them, is that he did time things, obviously, but he did not at any point that I could see actually directly kill anyone with magic. He knocked over a bunch of tents and it disabled the other armies to the point that Arthur and his army can come up and slaughter them. Or he just put a knight to sleep at one point in order to disable him. But I don't see him doing anything actually murdering. The illusions to order to sleep with women is kind of iffy, but not against the laws.
Right. Yeah. Changing yourself and changing your appearance, certainly through illusion magic, that is the, I mean, it's not morally or ethically sound, but it's not against the laws in any way, shape, or form, so.
It's gray zone stuff, as the law are regarded. I mean, technically, we don't know in which direction he travels through time. I mean, is it against the law to jump 200 years ahead but never go back? If you never go back, are you actually swimming against the currents of time? You don't break the law.
Right.
Yeah, you're always moving in one direction.
It's like one of the old legends with Merlin that he ages back through time.
Not that I saw.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere before, that Merlin ages backwards through time.
Yeah, I heard that one too. But...
Right, and that's one of the parts of the theory that Dresden is Merlin, is that Dresden is Merlin aging backwards somehow or something. But I don't personally adhere to that anymore. I think it's more like Dresden is paralleling Merlin's life, and that's why it's important, because maybe you'll get a hint as to what's coming down the pipe by paying attention.
If the White Council persists, if it stays around through the apocalyptic trilogy and everything, Harry survives, will he be the Merlin, the leader of the Council?
I personally think so, because I've always assumed that he was going to break free of the Winter Night mantle, and that this is kind of even in Merlin's things, he's like, Merlin's like, look, I fucked up and I did bad things, but here I am sitting on top and everybody else didn't make it. And I think Dresden's going to do something similar, where it's like, this is him being the old man of the mountain afterwards, telling all the little kids, this is what I did and on why I know what I know or something.
I mean, even from just a power perspective, I think in Turncoat, Rashid tells Dresden that, you're pretty much the strongest of your generation. People of your age like you. He basically said, yes, in 200 years, you are going to be the Merlin. And the pieces are there. You're probably going to be the Merlin at some point.
Right. And that's a really good point. That's a really good reference to bring up.
And I think... Jim said recently that there are cycles of history happening, so that would be back to your point that Dresden isn't Merlin, but he is paralleling Merlin. So Dresden is the Merlin of this cycle, of this 1000 cycle that's apparently happening in the Dresdenverse.
Right. So along those lines, real quick, something that occurred to me when we were talking about the origins of the White Council is that, I made a joke that they were kind of like a magic fan club that Merlin found and legitimized, which made me think about the Ordo that Harry finds in White Knight and then makes the Paranet out of them. And so maybe I'm just drawing my own parallels here, but maybe the White Council does fall apart and doesn't make it, but Dresden's got the Paranet in place to provide, a safety net, so to speak, that's one of the ways that he parallels the Merlin, that he found literally a magical fan club and made this huge international organization out of it that is there to help protect humanity, and not just the wizard level powers, but also the the lower level powers that often get ignored. And you're able to find those wizard level talents that way.
And it's also prepared for the new age, because the current White Council just can't keep up with 7 billion people. That's why we get so many warlocks, and the Parent is much better prepared for that. So it's the White Council for the 21st century.
And honestly, ironically, it gives me a little bit of hope, because now I'm not terrified that the Council's going to fall so much, as they're just going to clear the way for the next thing.
Or they will just merge officially, like the White Council 2.0.
Right.
It's like a very good thing. Like one is with the Parent. Is it arrogant or is it short sighted? Like the fact that the White Council just didn't care about minor talents. It's very foolish.
It is kind of foolish, but it also has to do about scale, right? If you've only got 500 wizards, you can't police fucking everything. So they don't even care about every warlock and sorcerer, just the ones that they can get their teeth into, you know, at the end of the day. That's why so much badness happens in the world, is because they can't get to everything. And that's part of what Nemesis is trying to do, in a way, is that Nemesis is superpowering some of these guys to put them on the Council's level and light as many little fires as they can to keep the Council busy and then pull them apart.
So the fact with Harry becoming Merlin is that either Ebenezer and Harry are descended from the Merlin, or they are at least like from the same like lineage in terms of mentor to mentee.
I mean, that's confirmed in Turncoat. We see the journals, so there is...
Yeah, I know, but it's not really confirmed because he teaches his grandson, and he taught his daughter Ebenezer. But was his teacher his dad, or was his teacher his uncle, or was his teacher family, or was it an unknown teacher?
Right. That's kind of the open question. Like, is Ebenezer literally directly, descended from Merlin, or is it more like Yoda's line, where Yoda taught Count Dooku, who taught, Darth Maul, whatever, and Qui-Gon Jinn. Yeah, exactly. So is that the line down to Anakin's level, or is it that they're literally family?
Well, we have a word of Jim saying that Merlin and Harry are not related. The original Merlin and Harry are not family. And then everyone in the tinfoil hat said, but can you be related to yourself? Harry's totally the original Merlin, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so, right. I personally think it's the Yoda through Count Dooku type of thing.
Actually, when I think about it, that he's the original Merlin, that would be a horrible twist.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's better than that.
Well, the people who think that have to disregard too much. Like, maybe he could be Merlin reincarnated, but he can't literally be Merlin. Like, there's obviously Harry's had his own life, so, yeah, it's not the same. Harry didn't have two parents that pretended to love him. He had two actual parents.
I just wanted to point out, to go back to the legends, Excalibur. Excalibur is Emerachius, and Emerachius is supposedly the only sword that was never reforged. And we all know that faith can give you extra power. Do you think that the reason why Emerachius was never reforged is because people have Excalibur in their mind, and that somehow strengthens the sword? Like, this was a test run before Uriel tried to create lightsaber Fidelacius. It was his first try to create a stronger sword through faith. I'm just going to create Excalibur, look if it influenced Emerachius. Apparently it did. I never had to reforge it. Great, test run done. Now let's try to make a lightsaber.
What you're saying is that Uriel set up the Star Wars saga. He went to George Lucas and was like, hey, listen, I got an idea. Take this and run with it.
Yeah. Well, we're just at over an hour and we should start wrapping it up. So I need help plugging everything because Alex isn't here and that's his job. So what else do we have? I have High Fantasy, which talks about writing and sci-fi, and it's fun. It's awesome. Well, please watch it and talk to us about it.
So you can find all of it at brokenjars.xyz, but yep. There's high fantasy, there's Dresden Files, 42's taking a hiatus through the end of the year, right?
But yeah, but we might be doing something like an experiment with it. Like instead of Ryan and Jacob, it's like going to be two people who've never talked to each other but are part of Broken Jars, and we'll just see what happens.
Maybe. Well, all of that's still rough draft is what it looked like. So so there will be more offerings soon. So they're not doing Shylocks anymore, right? Because they're on semi-permanent hiatus. You've got all the Twitch stuff.
Yep. Crap. Andreas?
I don't pay enough attention to the other podcasts. I'm sorry.
Twitch.tv/LookReady is my Twitch, where you can watch me play World of Warcraft mostly, if you're into that.
Right, and I think Alex also has one, which I think is just Shylocks, right? I don't know. And then we also
Shylocks gaming, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. He said it on other episodes. You could go look for it. We also have Dangerous to Go Alone, and that's like nerd club stuff. And Great Scott. Did we mention Great Scott?
Nope. Yeah, you're right. Those are both things we do.
Yep. It's all about The Office, and I just started watching that show first time through. It's really actually very fun.
Soon PM, Justin's very own podcast, 2018, 2019, 2020, sometime.
Yeah, well, get that going, and then you can join the group of people with multiple podcasts. Michael, do you have anything to plug by chance?
No, not really. Just thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Well, this was really fun. Thank you for joining us. All right. That's everything. So everyone say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.